Podtacular episode 320, first look into Halo's extended fiction for October 17th, 2012. Hello everyone, welcome back to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I'm your host, Duststorm, and today with me I have two very knowledgeable people and with very much knowledge in the Halo fiction, much more so than I, and they are here to kind of talk about some stuff, and I'm going to attempt to moderate, but I know both of these guys like to talk a lot, and I'm probably just going to start it off and just have them ramble on, but they are Grim Brother 1 and B to the Ryan Brian Newman. So both of you guys have been on the show. Welcome back.
Hey. What's up?
Not much. And a squeaky chair.
That's my fault.
It sounded like a small triceratops.
It's all right. That's kind of what my brain feels like right now. It's kind of squeaking on wheels and doesn't know where it's going. But I do know, however, that we're going to talk about some of the Halo books tonight. This isn't going to exactly turn out the way as I thought it would be. I've personally read the first six books. So I've read The Fall of Reach, The Flood, First Strike, Ghost of Onyx, Contact Harvest, and The Cold Protocol. So we're going to kind of try to focus on those books and see how they tie into the campaign for Halo 4. Probably more so the campaign than Spartan Ops, but... we'll see where the conversation goes. So, to start off, let's kind of take a quick look at the overall storyline of each of the books, and then we'll probably generate some discussion from there. For those of you who have already read the books, this will probably be a good time to just have kind of refresh your memory on some key points. Maybe not, depending on where the conversation goes, but hopefully. For those who haven't read the books, this will be kind of a good way for you to get a little bit more knowledgeable of the stories that have happened in the Halo universe that kind of tie into where Master Chief is now, how Requiem and the Forerunners play into the whole story of Master Chief, the Covenant, the Flood, and everything else that is tied up in this campaign story.
Half of what we say will refresh your memory, the other half will regress it.
Yes, very much so. And I'm probably just going to fall asleep over here in the corner and just let you guys go at it.
It will all be enlightening.
Oh, I'm sure it will be. I just don't know if my brain can keep up with it, right? With its current conscious state. But so let's get into the first book. The first one being The Fall of Reach. This book is mainly the book where we get introduced to Chief as a child. He gets abducted by the UNSC. Gets trained, gets genetically augmented, and becomes this badass super soldier. There are lots of views within the fiction of whether or not this was the right thing to do. That gets discussed later on. But we basically see the evolution of Chief as he is from a child, all the training that he goes through, his relationship with the other Spartans, Blue Team, Mendez, Halsey, Cortana, and... a lot of the other things that have pretty much at this point have kind of, we've seen kind of a dual purpose of fighting the insurrectionists and fighting the Covenant. But let's talk a little bit first about Chief's training. So he's abducted at the age of 6. And since you guys know, what planet was he from?
He was from Elysium City, which would have been one of the Aridnus colonies.
Yeah. All right.
I can't remember which specific number.
I don't either, so.
But he was abducted. Like, for some timeline stuff, he was abducted in 2517. So that would put his date of birth at 2511.
Right.
So just to get the timeline in there, and then the Covenant first invade in 2525. Halo 3 ends in 2553, and then Halo 4 takes up again in 2557. So there's your kind of timeline there to get everything, for everybody to wrap their heads around it.
Very nice. Looking at Wikipedia, thank you. Iridanus 2 is the planet that he was on.
Yeah, I said that.
Oh, you did? Okay. See, I told you my conscious state would not be able to keep up with you guys.
Well, this is going to be fun.
They have just discovered that they can mess with my mind for the next hour and a half, and they're going to enjoy every single moment of it. I guarantee
you. Actually, getting this question right was one of the things that got me an achievement on 1 versus 100 when they had the Halo night.
Oh, really?
You know what? I actually I got a prize at Halo Fest when they were doing questions there. Nice. It was one of those things where the question was what city was Chief from, and I won a McFarlane. It was during the McFarlane panel, and I won the Noble Six with the Cortana.
I remember that. Yeah,
and the Mongoose. Yeah, it was a really cool figure.
Ah, good times.
It was too big to carry back. I had to get another suitcase to fit all that stuff.
Very nice.
Yeah, I actually shipped stuff back.
That would have been way smarter. I spent $60 on another suitcase the night before.
Actually,
I had to bring back that Xbox, and I had to bring back just a bunch of other. They were just throwing stuff at us at Halo Fest. That was fun.
I had to have someone ship stuff back for me because they drove up, and I didn't have anywhere else to really put anything. And since I was there after on Sunday and left early Monday morning, I really didn't have a chance to go to a shipping place and ship stuff. So I had to actually have someone drive stuff home with them and then pay for them to ship it back to me.
Well, there's a FedEx place in the PAX building, so now we know that for future years.
Right, but yes. The fact that I was at Halo Fest all the time it was open, other than going to the two Halo panels, really didn't have much time to go to FedEx when it closed before us leaving Halo Fest. So it was kind of a downer, but I'm only out $30, but it's not bad. I have a stack of the Cortana Halo Legends posters. The one where Cortana's holding the Chief.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
I have a stack of those.
That's good stuff.
That I'll be giving those away at some point in the future. So,
cool. But yeah.
But back to Halo.
As far as Fall of Reach, if we're just going to kind of go through a good summary of each book, best thing to really say about Fall of Reach is it was it's kind of a – not a new fad, and back at the turn of the millennium, technically, dear God, late 90s, early 2000s, it was starting to become a little more popular to have like a novelization or at least a prequel novelization or graphic novel to a video game series. I think it was when, video games were really starting to kind of grow up a little bit and see that, like, hey, we're a good story too, and create something that would help just kind of immerse their hope, what would hopefully be a big fan base in the universe. That's really, to be honest, that's where Fall of Reach came from. And it was Microsoft tasked Nylund with writing this background story and get everything ready and set the stage. What's really funny is a lot of times you get these stories and they're still kind of full of a lot of throwaway stuff. But Fall of Reach has really surprisingly not only stood the test of time, just fictionally, but and connective tissue wise with the rest of the fiction. But it was just a good story, just a good military sci-fi story, and it still really does set itself as a reference for fiction fans to go back and look at and really, and I was just talking to somebody on NeoGAF the other day. Somebody had come on and was like, hey, what order should I read the books in? And it's like, well, there's release order and chronological order. It's like we like reading the Chronicles of Narnia series. The order that they take place in isn't necessarily the order that they came out in. So we were going through making a big list of chronologically, in the fiction where they take place. And I still don't necessarily recommend starting all the way at the beginning because technically Cryptum and Primordium take place beforehand. But to me, I always recommend people starting out with either the Fall of Reach or Contact Harvest. Because I think both of them give you a really great clue into what is happening and the reasons behind what is happening in the universe. And they just do so from different angles. With Fall of Reach, you really get a clue into humanity's side of the struggle and what's going on and what our motives are and the depths that we have sunk to, the depths that, and the heights that we've risen to, and the links that we would go to in order to survive. And then Contact Harvest is really the same from the Covenant standpoint. You learn a lot more about who the Covenant is and how they formed, and really specifically who the Prophets are and why they have this, you know, grudge against humanity, why we're even in this war in the begin with. So I think both of those are really good ones to start out with for any new fan that's coming in that really wants to dive into the extended fiction or just the universe as a whole.
Yeah, I definitely agree that Reach is that's the one to start with because it's such an engrossing novel. I mean, it's very well written. You know, that's surprising. It's really not something you would expect out of a science fiction video game book.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you had, you know, taken this book to, you know, say a, you know, literary professor and say, hey, this is actually a good book, they'd probably scoff at you. They're like, try some Shakespeare. You know, I mean, but it was surprisingly just a really well-crafted book. It was done very well. It sets the stage for characters that are still being written about today. I mean, it was just so well done. It did what the first game couldn't. Because the first game was so self-contained, and that was, you know, establish a backstory, establish that Master Chief isn't a robot, that he's a person, establish kind of this connection between him and Cortana, and really did a good job of explaining just who the Covenant were. Not necessarily in-depth from the Covenant's point of view, because we don't get that in the Fall of Reach, but we get that they are just this monstrous alien force that is just, I mean, beyond anything that we've ever seen before, and that, I mean, they kick our butts for 30 years straight. And it did a very, very good job of establishing just this is – Master Chief is basically the pinnacle of what humanity can accomplish and how one person can really make a difference and fight against that, against just this evil.
Yeah, and it is funny. Like you said, it really did provide a clue into a lot of the humanity behind some of the characters. And it's funny. We've kind of come full circle with that because one of the big driving forces – it behind a lot of like the storytelling techniques and angles that 343 is taking with Halo 4, they've mentioned over and over is that they want to get into the humanity of Chief. In fact, they call him John way more than they do Chief. And it's funny because somewhere along the way in those middle 8-9 years, it really did shift over to more of a killing machine is, while accurate, not necessarily all-encompassing, but did kind of become that, you know, you are the person inside and the more of like faceless hero kind of thing. But what's funny is that idea behind really wanting to explore and flesh out his humanity is not a new one because it started at the very beginning of the franchise. It started with what could be considered the first concrete piece of fiction to come out of Halo, and that's Fall of Reach. So it really did, you know, it got, you know, it let us get to know a 6-year-old boy and see him develop friendships and see him go through loss and see him, you know, talk to his instructors and his confidants and his teachers and his mentors and deal with losing family, losing friends, losing soldiers and we see a lot of that, the human interaction that ends up shaping who he is later on. So it is kind of neat to see it come full circle. It's like we started out with humanity. We kind of lost our own. Maybe we lost the humanity. Maybe the franchise in certain ways lost its idea of the humanity in between. But now we're going back to that. So.
All righty.
You have a very squeaky chair, bro.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm going to have to...
It's okay. Mine's squeaky, too.
Don't move.
Mine is also very squeaky.
Blame the chair department here. Whoever's issuing out chairs here, they gotta step it up. That'd be my dad. I'll let him know.
Alrighty. So we get more than an introduction of Chief. We also get an introduction of Dr. Halsey and her plan for the Spartan 2s. The whole abducting children idea, which is not very favorable among many of the leaders of the UNSC. as we find out in some of the later books. But we also get the introduction of Keyes, and some of the stuff that he's done is kind of highlighted in some of the other books. But we get a couple of things in The Fall of Reach, one of which is a maneuver that he made. On the
Keyes loop.
Yes, the Keyes loop.
Yeah, I love that. He did that in the Iroquois.
Mm-hmm. At Sigma Octonus cool 4.
Sequence.
Yep.
Yeah, you know what? Have any of you read the Hunt for Red October?
I've seen the movie. I've seen it.
You've seen the movie? It was so much like that. It was really great. There must have been some inspiration taken from Red October
for
that sequence.
I remember reading that part over and over and over and over again, trying to wrap my head around
what exactly he did,
what was going on. Yeah, and it was neat seeing the little slip that was included, I want to say, in Halsey's journal.
I still have not looked at that thing.
Oh, it's magnificent. Oh, Nyland wrote that, right?
Yes, Nyland wrote
that. I have three of those things, and I have yet to look at it.
Oh, they're so good.
They're really good. And there's a bit in there, and I don't know if it's in the book itself or it's one of the little extra little pieces that come in the book. But it actually diagrams out the Keyes loop and shows like step one, step two, step three, step four, and kind of goes through it. And
refresh my memory. It was basically that he took bait, or the Covenant took bait of his ship, and then he looped around something and basically shot the plasma back in the Covenant's face?
Well,
was that it, or was it something else?
He trailed, and this is just off of memory, so
my memory's not as great as yours is, so I'm kind of relying on you guys here.
He was in the Iroquois, and he had at least two ships coming up behind him, and he trailed a nuke, I think a Shiva warhead, if I'm not mistaken. They basically dropped it off, like in space. And they had one. He went on like a collision course with one of the Covenant ships, diverted away just enough so that the plasma lances that were fired at him actually hit those ships instead.
Right.
And then it may have been in either a cruiser or a carrier caught up to him. He detonated the nuke, which disabled it, and then he just gravity slingshot around that nearby planet and essentially macked him and finished him off as they were dead in the water. But essentially what he did was kind of did the whole the famous, there's a heat-seeking missile on me. I'm going to fly really close to the cliff and pull up so that the missile hits the cliff. Very much like that, except he got their armaments to hit another Covenant ship. So
it did such a good job of just showing like the stress of what is basically space chess. I mean, if you really a very good job of just Keyes is scared out of his damn mind. But as the leader, he has to maintain absolute control.
Yeah.
Just to make sure the men, do their jobs. And it was a really, really great piece of fiction. Fall of Reach was such a good book, and it's kind of a shame how it's a little bit outdated now, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Some of the events of, that's to be expected. I mean, because
that's
they had
right.
no idea how big. Yeah, they had no idea how big Halo was going to be when they did that. They were like, okay, this is probably going to be a successful thing, but I mean, they had no idea it was going to become what it was. So, I mean, some of that is just natural that, yeah, all right, some of the original details we came up with might not be fully correct. 343 is doing their absolute best, though, to try and clear some of that stuff up.
Yeah. And you know what? You kind of have to. Like, I mean, and frankly, anybody, people come. They like to complain, just because people like to complain, but people like to complain that, oh, well, we're having to go back and change this detail. We're going to have to change this detail. But, man, we could be Star Wars. I mean, I mean, you know, they've got hundreds or thousands of books and entire swaths of novels and story arcs that are like, yeah, that doesn't count. That doesn't count. Why are you even reading that? Don't even, that doesn't count. You know, it's like, really, what we nitpick about is just so little when you really think about, you know, in the grand scheme of things, for, you know, people are like, well, you should just have this planned out. I mean, like, who in the world would plan out? Like, it doesn't even make any sense to expend your energy on planning a franchise out for 10 years. Now,
but there are a few things that just kind of seem like blatantly obvious, where I think it would be a little bit more understandable if it's like, well, okay.
I think it's blatantly obvious now. I mean, how many stupid things have you done in your life? Let's not list them, please. But, like, how many stupid things that now you look at and you're like, well, that was blatantly obvious. But when you're in the middle, I mean, you know, sports is a good example. We are constantly going like, why didn't you just run to the right? Didn't you see that the right was completely open?
Right, but that's more, like, of an instantaneous response than something you've been developing a game for 3 years on.
Yeah, but it's more instantaneous than you think. You know, with deadlines, there's always something new to do. It's like we have to make this decision. We have to do it right now. And sometimes you get along the way, they may even realize that something doesn't match up, but don't have the time. You can't get 4 weeks away from going gold and realize, oh, there's a little bit of a continuity snafu, or this might become an issue 7 years down the line. Let's go ahead and jump back the 3 months of development that it would take to fix it. You know, like, there's just, the hindsight is always, always going to be clearer. And I don't disagree that there are certain things that I'm sure was just, you know, either not noticed or just swept under the rug. But the main point being that we're really lucky that there is as little stuff swept under that proverbial rug as it is.
What I'm getting out of this is that Halo does not need a George Lucas. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, we are correct. It needs
we're fine without that. We don't need an anniversary of anniversary edition. Are we cool without that?
Yeah. I don't think we
very
need
much
anniversary
so.
Anniversary reception or something. And to go back real quick and clarify on the keys loop, I just flipped it around. Yeah, so they were chasing a Covenant. There was a Covenant carrier and a Covenant destroyer, and the Iroquois basically just, you know, trailed a mine and, you know, allowed Covenant weapons to be locked on and fired, and then they grazed the Covenant destroyer just slipping past it so that it could get hit instead. And then when the original firing Covenant ships got to the nuke, they detonated the nuke and then slingshot around and finished them off. When you put this episode up, make sure you link to the image.
Yeah, I will.
Because it's a really great thing, you know, for people who don't have their hands on the Halsey jersey. Journal. I started talking about sports, and now I'm thinking of Catherine in a jersey. But yeah, it's a cool little reference.
Yeah, I'll make sure to throw that in the show notes page for you guys.
You know, that's actually one of Nyland's specialties, is those space battles.
Yes, agreed.
I mean, like, he gets onto it later in I think he does a space battle in every one of the books he did. He did one in First Strike.
And actually, one of his best descriptions of – and technically it wasn't necessarily as much of a space battle, but he had some great space battle sequences in his story in Evolutions, the one about
Cole Protocol.
About Cole. Yeah. Cole. Yeah, I think it was the impossible life and improbable death of Preston J. Cole or something.
You know, if it wasn't for Ghost of Onyx, that would probably be my favorite Nyland piece. He did such a good job on that.
Except for the last part.
Well, what do you mean the last part? The last part
the thing that we talked about last week. The whole Kurt issue.
No. I mean, Ghost of Onyx is probably my favorite out of the books. I was saying that my favorite...
Oh, okay.
My second favorite piece of literature that's been done by really any of them, I could probably say, is The Impossible Life and Improbable Death of Preston Cole. That was a really good one, is what I was saying.
Have not read that.
Oh, it's so good. It's an evolution read.
Right. My plan was to bypass Evolutions and try and get the other four books done for the time being.
It's only like 20 or 30 pages. It's really it was a short story.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
I mean, it's a quick read and it's really good. But it just overall, the space battles are just Nylund's thing. He really gets them. He really gets the understanding, just the nature that Halo is. It's a military story.
You can tell he visualizes it.
He does such a good job of it. And he does something that none of the other authors really do. I mean, he makes his books military books.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, even if the games don't even go out and so much as do that, Reach was kind of the first one that really made it feel a little bit more military-ish than the others.
Yeah.
But, I mean, all of his books, you know, they're all dated. There's always, you know, that little section at the beginning of every chapter that says, you know, this is military time. This, you know,
location.
Here's the date. Here's everything. It looks like a military novel. It feels like it. He's very, very good at that.
I almost take that for granted when reading the other books, because when I was reading The Cold Protocol, it's like, wait, where – or
Where there's like no date anywhere.
Wait, where are we right now? What year is this? How do I reference this to the other books in the timeline? What's going on here? So yeah, that's definitely one thing I've really appreciated out of Nylund's writing style. And like you said, it's very structured and very, very military-like, which is I wish he would do another book.
Yeah, I don't know what Nylund's doing right now, but I really hope they get him back.
He works for Microsoft still, as far as I know. I mean, I know he helps out on a lot of stuff, so.
Yeah, but I want to see him on Halo, not necessarily just Microsoft. I mean, if you catch my drift.
I don't want him writing the Surface tablet manual. I want him writing Halo.
Yeah.
But I was actually really disappointed when Nylund didn't write the sequel to Ghost of Onyx, frankly. Yeah. Not that Karen Travis is a bad author. I like what she's done well enough. But I think that Nylund and Travis had two very different ideas for what was going to happen post-Ghost of Onyx. And I think there was a very big problem with just, frankly, they just took so much time in between those two novels. It was 5 years in between Ghost of Onyx and Glasslands.
That's ridiculous.
And that was one of the worst cliffhangers I think I've ever been left on.
Yeah.
That was just...
It was actually way worse than Halo 2's.
Oh, yeah, it was. And you know what made it even worse was then the next year when they were doing Halo 3, the book that came out with that was Contact Harvest. And that, you know, immediately that drove me up. I mean, Contact Harvest is a great book, but it was, oh, come on, we got to know what happens.
Yeah.
It was just, it was such, I would classify that as one of the worst cliffhangers I've ever had to endure. And that was 5 years of it. I mean, that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, I mean, right there, like, if you think about that, that is the gap of time in between Halo 3 and Halo 4. Only Ghost of Onyx was left on a bit more of a dramatic cliffhanger than Halo 3. You know, Halo 3's was left on a bit of a somber note.
Yeah.
Ghost of Onyx was left on, there is this huge, huge story that we are... You're just so close, yet so far away from hearing it.
Yeah.
It was really unfortunate that it took him so long to do. And I kind of wish that that Nylund had gotten to continue doing the – or if he'd gotten to write the Kilo 5 trilogy, but that's all right. Travis is doing a good enough job as it is. She's all right. At least we're getting it. We're getting the story.
Well, and I think the focus being more on Oni and being more on that, you know, Black Ops, Black Ink kind of fare, I think suits her style much better. And I think that's why I almost feel like in some ways, like, you know, like they didn't even necessarily plan originally to have the Dyson Sphere crew wrapped up. You know, maybe they thought like, you know, the fans really want this. And if we don't put it in here, we're not going to get to it for another, you know, like, because the way the book was divided up almost felt a little like that. And my really only issue was I just felt like it was rushed. I felt like the discovery of what was there and the interactions between the Spartans that were there, which was fantastic and very well done by Karen Travis. But the returning everything, you know, returning the Dyson Sphere research facility into normal space and all of that was just felt rushed. That's really all.
Absolutely. I mean, if you had asked me, you know, right before Glass Onions would come out, you know, if somebody had said, all right, track, like, in your opinion, what do you think is going to happen over the course of these next three books? I would not have pegged them getting a Dyson Sphere until like the middle of book two.
Yeah.
Right. I would have been that is just a ways off. I mean, they're stuck in this huge thing. They get out of there after a very short amount.
Yeah.
Short
amount I will say the interaction between Lucy and the engineers was some of my favorite interactions in all of the Halo books.
That was really good, but actually I like there's some in there I like a little bit better. Was the time delay interaction in between Halsey's conversation with Perengoski.
Yes.
There was so much stress in that conversation because anybody who hasn't read it, they were kind of in a different dimension. You know, so time moved much faster for the people on Earth, essentially. So it was, there was a 20-minute gap in between all their conversations.
Yeah.
It was kind of like, you know, sending a message, texting somebody and then not getting a response for 20 minutes per, you know, response. But for them, it was happening instantly. Yeah. But I mean, for them, it was happening instantly. And it's just such a weird time thing. And it was just kind of, how do you maintain like a tough, like conversation with somebody over the course of 20-minute gaps, right? Like, how do you yell at somebody 20 minutes later? You're still angry at these people, but you can't just like, you know, yell at them 20 minutes later, 30 minutes, however long the time dilation was. It was really just done very well. I love that part of the book.
Not to rain on your guys' parades, but right.
There's a parade?
Well, I mean, you guys are kind of running one at the moment, right?
What are we doing?
No,
it's a Halo Pride.
I'm just saying. Let's try to keep on.
Did you say bread?
The first six books. Bread. What?
I'm starving.
Go make yourself a PB&J sandwich or something. I don't know. If you're thinking of bread.
So next book you want to do? First Strike or Flood? I guess.
I wanted to touch on a couple more things on the Fall of Reach. The first one being the glyph that Cortana used to do the random slipspace jump to Halo. Was that found on Reach or was that?
That was found on Sigma Octanus.
Yeah.
Okay,
so 4, I think.
So the way that we ended up finding Halo was there was an
not by accident.
No,
it wasn't quite so random.
It wasn't quite so random. We found this glyph that was what was it?
It was in a crystal.
Yeah, but it was in a cave structure, right? A cave system or a
tunnel
system?
Wasn't a natural formation.
No, it was it was in a museum.
Yeah, it was in a museum.
Oh, that's right, because there was the Huragakan taking apart the car. That's right.
Yes, because I love the the movie TV trope of you know, someone in the sewers lifting up the manhole.
Yeah, exactly.
And looking, like, it's exactly what it was. It's like, you know, blue team is like lifting up the manhole, basically, and it's like, oh, Hunter boot.
Yeah, and then they watched the engineer take apart the car and put it back together or something like that.
Yeah, probably turned it into something better and perfect, like a Dodge Viper, whatever it was.
It was like a Dodge Viper. It didn't even need gasoline. It was like, you know, you just breathe into it and it works just fine. You're fine, dude.
Yeah. So this crystal that has been in the museum for quite some time, Dr. Halsey found out some information about it, sent the Spartans to go and retrieve it. And then when Reach was under attack by the Covenant, somewhat according to the Cold Protocol, Cortana did the random slipspace jump, but didn't make it so random and used the coordinates found in the glyphs and found Halo.
Well, what you're referring to with the Spartans being on board the ship and, you know, what their mission was, that was called Operation Red Flag. And the coordinates to Halo actually had nothing to do with it at that time. What was going on there was there's actually some confusion now as to how those events happened because of the events of Halo Reach the game.
Yeah.
This is the biggest plot. I don't want to call it a plot hole because they probably got an explanation for it somewhere. 343 has been doing very, very good job at kind of cleaning up some of those things. They did so with their data drops earlier this year.
It's like a plot crack.
Crack. Yes. And essentially it is, well, in Halo Reach the game, the Autumn had never made orbit yet. So Operation Red Flag had not commenced. In the book, Operation Red Flag was a go. They were an hour into the mission when Reach was invaded, and they were told to turn around and come back, deploy Spartans to the ground, and figure out where to go from there. Well, it was when they deployed all their Spartans and Master Chief was boarding Gamma Station that Cortana kind of came to the idea. Is like, all right, we're going to have to get out of here soon. Huh, what's this coordinate here? We picked this up a little while ago. This is interesting. Let's go there. I mean, because, you know, we got to follow Cold Protocol anyway, and odds are we're going to die in like the next 5 minutes anyway. So we might as well just go there and find out what's up. And that is essentially how Halo 1 happened. So it definitely was not a random accident, but at the same time, though, it was not a priority either. And it's really, I mean, it's a good thing that it did happen, because the objective of Red Flag was to capture one of the Covenant hierarchs.
What were the there's actually they do a they actually did a job of trying to seal up some of that discrepancy with the data drops, the Oni data drops that were released on Waypoint.
Release those? I had some confusion.
It was leading up to the release of Glasslands.
Okay, so it was just after Halo Fest then.
Yes.
Okay.
So,
but yeah, they did a very good job of plugging some of those holes. Parangoski out to be even more of a rotten than they try to than they normally do. The whole thing of the data drops was that Parangoski set up the fall of Reach. That she allowed the Covenant to find Reach as a ploy to get the Spartans onto a Covenant ship. Those were some really good data drops. They did a very fantastic job of that. At the same time, though, they're trying to cover their tracks and saying, we do have a bit of a plot discrepancy here that we have to address at some point. They haven't fully fixed it yet, but they've done a very good job considering how do you fix up a 10-year-old book that has been basically the foundation of your canon and then have that changed all of a sudden? They've done a really remarkable job for what was given to them. I think one of the other big plot hole in, or not again plot hole, but plot issue in the fall of Reach is that Reach was the first time that Master Chief in his 30-year career had ever encountered elites before, or hunters. So, he'd been fighting grunts and jackals for 30 years, which, I mean, anybody who's played the games goes, what? Okay. Yeah. Boy, that must have been an easy career. But
why did we think this was hard?
Was
he playing on heroic?
Exactly. And, I mean, that was a change that they very quickly rectified. I think by the time – it was probably even by the next book, by the time the book The Flood came around, that you had characters mentioning elites in past tense before the Battle of Reach. So, they very quickly addressed that issue, but it's still been a long-standing issue of what was Chief doing for 30 years. So, that was just always an issue that has plagued some people with Reach. That has obviously been changed since then, though.
All righty.
So, it actually... data drop 6, the second message, sorry about that, the sixth data drop is a group of transmissions sent by the crew of the Pillar of Autumn captured by Oni Section 3 the morning of August 30th, 2552. The first message helps explain how the Autumn was able to land in Ezzod later in the day, while the second offers an explanation to the replacement of the M90 and the M45 shotgun.
Yeah, there we go. That's perfect. That is a really fantastic. Would you put that up in the link there?
Yep.
Cool. Thank you. I haven't seen those data drops since they came out over a year ago. So I tried to look for them the other day and was having a tough time finding them. But that's a really good. Again, they've done the best possible job that they could to fix some of these canon issues. I think really there's one other issue that I wasn't quite satisfied with their explanation, but we'll accept it. Is there is a bit of a timeline inconsistency between really with the Battle of Reach itself. In the game, it starts in July. I think it was July. I forget what the exact date was. But in the book, all the primary events, the Reach is invaded in a day. So, Graham, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, pretty much.
And those data drops kind of cover that, but I wasn't really satisfied with the explanation.
There's also some back and forth with the radio transmissions. And for those people who don't know, on each of the multiplayer maps for Reach, the first ones, there are radios kind of tossed about, and if you go to them and listen to them, it's actually a back and forth. You hear full conversations going on.
Do not do this during a game.
Yeah, do not do this during a game. Yeah, do this like running around a multiplayer map by yourself or in Forge or in theater mode. I think you can even do it.
Unless you're the other team, do not do this during a game.
Isn't there also some in the campaign in Firefight as well?
I think there might be some in Firefight. And which in case is obviously easier to listen to in theater.
Yeah, and there's definitely other ones in campaign.
Yeah, I was trying to find it. And the radio transmissions actually follow Red Team and some of the generator defense missions that are eventually described in First Strike. Because what's funny is that First Strike is also about the Fall of Reach.
Yeah, well, parts of it are.
Yeah.
It encompasses before and after.
Exactly, yeah. It's about, you know, some of the Spartans returning to Reach. I've mentioned this before, maybe even on this podcast. It also has one of my favorite moments in there where the Knife 2-6, who is the pilot of the longsword
that was escorting the
knife like stabby stab.
I don't remember that guy, but okay.
Yeah, knife 2-6. I believe it was a girl. Knife 2-6 was escorting the Pelican that had Fred and company on it back down to the surface of Reach, and they were being pursued by Covenant, and so Knife 2-6 just pulled off and I believe said, like, you know, give him hell down there or something, and held off the Covenant more or less single-handedly, and I'm sure, you know, sacrificing their life in the process so that Fred and the Spartans could gracefully crash land the Pelican down onto Reach. So
yeah, near space drop. Yeah, that was cute, Felix. But,
yeah,
these
yeah,
guys
good,
do
good
real
call
space
on
drops.
That. You know, they're all sponsored by Red Bull. So.
Yeah. But no, that was a really good sequence. I love how they did that. First Strike was just that was just another really well done book. That was Nylund's return to the franchise.
Yeah, First Strike was great. Great characters in First Strike.
It was what built up the events in between Halo 1 and Halo 2. It was what made Halo 2 make sense. And, you know, it explained, you know, hey, how did Johnson live? How did Chief get back to Earth when he had a ship with no slipspace drive? It had a lot of nice things that just kind of just, all right, everything got tucked away. And, I mean, really, there was enough action going on in that book to make an entire game in between Halo 1 and Halo 2. Chief's return to Reach was just great. There's this huge plot event. Master Chief hijacks a Covenant ship.
Yeah,
to get back to Reach, and I mean nobody had done that before, and he's just like, you know what, I'm gonna do that. That's cool. Me and Sergeant Johnson.
Then they blow up the unyielding elephant, as Johnson called it.
Yeah, Johnson's pretty great about that.
Unyielding elephant. It was like what the chief and
Locklear.
five or six other Marines.
Yeah,
taking care of one Covenant cruiser or something like that.
Yeah, Locklear was the ODST. Who did he? He had a thing for one of the.
Oh yeah, he did.
Pilot. It might have been a pilot.
Let's see.
I could look it up, but the computer's all the way over there.
Pulaski.
Pulaski, thank you. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, Locklear and Pulaski. That's right. Man, What's up with, like, the UNSC and, like, hot women pilots? You got Fohammer, you got Pulaski, you've got Devereaux now in the Kilo 5 series.
I think that's a bit from Alien. You remember the pilot in Alien 2?
Your Xbox agrees.
Yeah, dude, my Xbox got my back. Actually, you know what? My Xbox didn't have my back the other day. The damn power brick went out on it.
Oh, not cool.
Yeah, I had to swap power bricks from one of the other boxes. That kind of sucked.
But yeah, so this is one of the tidbits I've remembered from the book for some reason, but Cortana was able to modify the plasma stations to shoot plasma laser beams instead of the giant blobs of plasma.
You know what? Yeah. She does something kind of cool with that, and it's kind of almost like the precursor to the upgrades that are made to the Infinity later on.
Yeah.
Because now, I mean, by the time
you get to efficiency, some of the other books, really.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, absolutely. One of the big ideas behind those books as well is that they established that the Covenant is really brilliant, but at the same time, they have no idea what they're actually using. I mean, they are using repurposed.
Yeah.
They're really brilliant to the extent of they are smart enough to go, hey, that's awesome. Let's use it against our enemies. And hey, those engineers can fix anything. Let's just let them fix everything.
Yeah, I mean, that really is the biggest weakness.
Really, yeah, they're political.
How they fall apart.
Yeah, their prowess really was in, you know, on the elite side, that you know, the war prowess, the strategic prowess, and the you know, that kind of never say die, that fighting gumption, and then the political prowess. They, you know, the Sanshayum had that political elegance and brilliance and connivingness to them. But really, as far as technical expertise, they, you know, they really didn't necessarily know what they even had. And you know, when Cortana got hold of it, and she was like, what do they do? Why are they doing this? You know, like, they look, zip, 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 zip. Oh, now I've just made all their stuff even more awesome. Mm-hmm. Like, and it does, you know, I like what you said, Brian, too. It is an echo to what we see now, and it's a very much an echo to what we see the Huragok doing, with human technology as they integrate the Forerunner technology into what we have.
I really like how in Thursday War, they made a very specific point of saying, we cannot let the Huragok go on doing what they're doing unchecked. We have to watch and monitor every single thing that they do, because if we don't do that, then we're going to
keep a record of it.
Yeah, we're going to become reliant upon the engineers the same way that the Covenant were. And that was their – I mean, that was really the Covenant's major downfall. The Covenant had no idea what they had. What's that that quote from Jurassic Park, you know, where Ian Malcolm's like, you know, you had no idea what you had. You know, you packaged it. You know, you slapped it onto a lunchbox and then, bam, you want to sell it. You know that thing?
Yeah, exactly.
Just, they had no idea what they had. And, I mean, that was just the biggest problem for them. I mean, the elites, you know, they weren't scientists, they weren't doctors, they weren't engineers. So, I mean, they were warriors. That's it. The damn grunts it, had no idea. Yeah. The grunts had no idea what, I mean, of course, the grunts have no idea what's going on. Honestly, I'd say the group that probably has the most idea, the most biggest handle on what the technology is probably the jackals. I mean, they might have a vague idea of how it works, but the jackals seem to be doing okay at the end of Halo 3.
Yeah, they're driving trucks and everything.
Oh, yeah, dude. Yeah, man, they're balling. You don't mess with them. But that was actually probably my favorite part of Thursday War. It was just like they just pull up and it's like, huh, that's a little weird, but all right.
I definitely imagine them listening to like some thick bass rap too.
Oh, absolutely. You know, like, I mean, you know that one of them's – they're wearing gang signs, right? I mean, they've got to be.
Of course. Like, hey, one of them's got like a headband. One of them has a flat brim hat tilted sideways.
It's like, hey man, I'm gonna cut you. I'm gonna cut you so bad. You're gonna wish I know wish cut I you cut so bad. But yeah, I mean that. I really like how Karen Travis went out to say we've got these human characters, and I mean that is just kind of the what drives humanity is knowledge and kind of the pursuit of knowledge.
Yeah.
And humanity has to learn how everything works. And that's just kind of just who we are as species and as people in general. We kind of have to be in control of everything, which, I mean, that's a good it's a good idea. And I mean, that definitely is, you know, the overall idea behind Oni's galactic politics is we got to be in charge, which, okay, I mean, you know, more power to you. But the Covenant did not have that drive to know what it is they had. All they knew was that they were the dominant power in the galaxy due to these three or four or five advantages that they had. And they were absolutely fine to rely on those things. But as soon as you took away one of those key elements, then it all fell apart.
Yeah.
So I guess moving on to from an adaptation aspect of the Covenant, going back to the book, the next part of First Strike kind of revolves around Castle Base and what Halsey and her team found there, and John coming back with this Covenant ship that everyone's like, whoa, what the heck? Because no one was really expecting that to be coming into reach.
Yeah.
And then, who was the ranking officer that John picked up during their little escapade?
What was his name? It was,
Haverson?
No.
Oh. Yeah, the Oni.
The Oni guy was Haverson.
Well, no, he was the Navy guy. Yeah, I love how we're the ones who were called in to talk about this, and we can't remember the damn name.
It's all right. It's a lot of information that's rattling in those brains of yours.
You know,
so,
you know, in our defense, we were called in to talk about Thursday War.
No, you were called. I mentioned to you guys when you were coming on that I was going to be talking about the first six books.
You know that there are fans who are listening to this right now. They're screaming, "These guys are idiots! I would be doing such a better job." These guys, come on. I know I do that every time I hear somebody forget a name.
I know.
God, what is his name? I feel terrible now.
I mean, I'm looking at the Halo Wiki pages and Wikipedia.
Whitcomb, baby.
Whitcomb.
There we go. Anyway, Whitcomb is a really cool guy. Whitcomb actually does something that I don't know if this will come back in later Halo stories or if this is something that they're fudging entirely. And boy, I got some slack for talking about this the other day on
That was so funny.
My God, it is amazing how serious some people take a hypothetical genocide, right? From aliens, right? So Whitcomb has in his possession something called the Nova Bomb, which this is the biggest, baddest nuclear bomb that's ever been made. I mean, it's a planet buster. They do it to destroy planets. And that's what they use to destroy the unyielding Hierophant at the end of First Strike. That was what they used to – it was in Ghost of Onyx where they detonated that, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, it was the station in Ghost of Onyx where they detonated. I'm sorry. So it goes to another book when they actually detonate it. But, I mean, this is the biggest, baddest bomb that humanity has ever made. I wonder if that will ever come back into future stories or if that was a one-time thing and we're never going to mention it. I made a comment on HBO the other day. You know, people are talking about how, oh, my God, Oni, they're the worst people in the entire world. They're making the elites fight each other for their own cruel ambitions, blah, 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 blah. I said, well, Oni's actually being a lot nicer than they could. Oni could just go in there and Nova Bomb Saint Helios and end the whole problem right then and there. Obviously, that wouldn't lead for a fun story. What they're doing is a lot better.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, that is an option. That is a card that is in their back pocket. And boy, did I catch fire for that. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it was detonated, but it wasn't blown up by us. Like, yeah, the engineers blew it up accidentally.
It was a
group of engineers, and there were grunts that were there as well, but it was a supercarrier. I don't remember what the name of it was. It was Joyous Exaltation?
It might be the name. I mean, I guess the name.
No. Joyous Exaltation was the planet. But it was a Covenant supercarrier. I remember that it was on, and it blew up.
It was just a really awesome plot device. Is that wow? We have this kick-ass bomb that can, you know, and it actually kind of leads you to wonder why hasn't the UNSC been using those before? I mean,
yeah, because it blew up basically, if I remember right, like 300 and something ships.
Exactly. Is this a one-time thing? I mean, did the UNSC only have enough resources to put those on reach? I mean, it could very well have been okay. This is our self-destruct option.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
We don't want. you know, the Covenant accessing
our... Is this our suicide bomb, or...
So it could very well be the UNSC just doesn't even have any more of those, or maybe they only made one or two, you know, one for Reach and one for Earth. Who the hell knows? But I really, it's interesting how, I mean, I wonder, is that going to come back eventually? Because, I mean, Oni is right now the most powerful organization in the entire galaxy at this point. They have control of the Infinity, which is just, I mean, the biggest, baddest warship that you could possibly imagine. And if they have a handful of those Nova bombs, well, damn.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, I think that, you know, either we have, you know, more Nova bombs, or now with Forerunner technology, we're going to have something even greater.
Oh, yeah, we could have our own pocket halos.
Yeah.
I mean, it could be like, okay, let's detonate Halo Light, you know?
Yeah. Halo Frisbees. Frisbees of death.
But, I mean, there's some interesting... interesting things that Oni could do that, I mean, frankly, I mean, it's my opinion that Oni's being nice right now. So, but. Yeah.
Well, Oni is not being as big of a dick as they could be.
They are being quite understand. In terms of galactic extermination, having your asses handed to you for 30 straight years, you're on the point of extinction.
Yeah.
Oni is being quite reasonable.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm. I understand the great cry of the opposition as far as what you're saying. Oh, well, we don't want to be any better than them, or don't say yes. Yeah. I know. But at the same time, you also cannot fault for wanting to make sure that we are doing everything possible to ensure our own survival. Because if we're not ensuring our own survival, our moral standing is in some ways largely irrelevant.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, that whole idea, you know, I'd rather die with my morality than live without it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a very different question when you're actually faced with that.
Yeah.
We've never actually had to deal with
and
that.
It's a different thing when it's an individual versus a species, because if I were to look at it myself, and if there was something that I could do, and I died in a way that, you know, with that, using that, you know, die with my morality, or, you know, well, I'm then leaving an example of a good moral high ground for maybe my children or my family or maybe the rest of humanity, depending on the scale of what we're talking about. But if this is your species and there is no more, you know, example for anything, there's just no more. There's no, you're erased from the history books because there are no history books now. You know, there has to be, that has to be taken into account where, you know, you do need to, I mean, what greater ingrained thing biologically in us is there than the preservation of the species?
You know what? That's a really good point. I know I might get some fire for this, but I really respect Perengoski's character just as a whole. She might be an evil, rotten, but she knows what she's got to do.
Yeah, I respect her the same way that I have respect for Halsey.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, I personally think that Halsey is even more evil and even more rotten, but in the end, though, she did something that.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
hey,
the big difference between her is that Halsey started that program not to fight Covenant.
Yeah, absolutely. She did it to fight people. And I mean, there are more parallels to the
U.S. Civil War than anything in
the Civil War and the American Revolution. It's all I mean, one big combination. That's actually one of the things that I love about the Halo universe, is there is this huge, gigantic portion that they have really not gotten to, and that is the Insurrection. That is because, I mean, they make a very...
I don't think we'll ever get to it, at least in game form.
No, agreed. Forward Unto Dawn is kind of sketching over some stuff of that right now. But, I mean, they're kind of greasing over it for the most part. But, I mean, if you... There's a really good point. I forget which book... It was probably one of the Evolution short stories that mentioned this, but if the Insurrection had not had happened, then humanity would have been absolutely demolished by the Covenant in less than the 30 years. A lot less than the 30 years.
Because I don't remember which one it was, too. I don't remember if it was Dirt, maybe. because I know that dealt with a lot with the insurrection and UNSC relationship. But yeah, I do remember that specifically saying that, and that's absolutely true as well. So, had we not been over prepared for a human uprising, we would have been severely under prepared for an alien one.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we have all these ships that you have no idea how to use. I mean, yeah, it's really cool to build these spaceships that, you know, you can shoot max and detonate nukes in space, but I mean, with no practice, how do you do that? You know, I mean, that was 100% theoretical. The first space battles were happening, or the yeah. first real ones anyway, the first major space battles were happening during the inspection. And they, I mean, even then, that didn't even really properly prepare them for Covenant tactics.
Yeah.
But no, they've got some, I mean, there's just some really great backstory, and it can get a little bit political as well. And that's kind of one of the things I really like about it.
And you know what? It's no different than what has endeared people to science fiction of all walks, you know, for a long time. And, you know, there's been a lot of series with a far greater, a longer standing than Halo. I mean, series like Doctor Who, series like Star Trek. I mean, Star Trek did it all the time, especially the original series. I mean, they tackled all sorts of social issues. They, you know, they tackled ideas of different government styles and lifestyles. I tackled ideas of social issues with one of the real famous social issue episodes was the episode in the original Star Trek where you had the two races, quote unquote, of this one species that were humanoid, and they looked like a black and white cookie, you know, and
ooh, Seinfeld.
Yeah. And they hated each other, but they were both black on one side and white on the other side, like a checkerboard black and white. And I remember, I think it was Kirk or Spock or whatever, asking, like, you know, why you guys hate each other? And they're like, they're looking like, you know, they're sitting there like the Incredulous Hulk, you know, like, you're like, don't you see? He's like, well, you're both black and white. He's like, yes, but he is black on the right side. I am black on the left side. Like, you know, but what's funny is did actual humanity do anything any different? No. You know, here we are spending years and years. Who are these people? These are my slaves. Why? They have a much better tan than me, you know, like, or, you know, and it's not like it ended with slavery. You know, we had segregation. It was the same thing. You know, why do you hate these people? Well, they're black. Well, so, you know, and it's, you know, this is obviously not about that, but it lends itself to science fiction can comfortably get away with tackling certain issues that are deeply ingrained into our culture and our psyche, as long as they reskin it with aliens and planets. You know, it's a lot easier to think about the ramifications of the Revolutionary War or ramifications of a civil war when instead of using the Confederacy and the Union, you're using the inner and the outer colonies.
And you know what? It's a much deeper story than we're actually given. You can actually see both sides of the argument.
Yeah.
On the insurrection.
That's what I like about Forward Under Dawn, actually, the series, is they seem to, you know, to want to explore that with Lasky's character specifically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you can definitely see both sides of it, though, in that the insurrection, or, you know, the outer colonies, you know, I mean, you move to the outer colonies to get away from government, right? I mean, yeah. It's like, you know, I don't want to be taxed that much. I just come, let me do my thing. But at the same time, though, the UNSC spent all this money investing into getting these colonies up and running. Yeah. So, I mean, there's a significant investment on their part too. So, well, I mean, you can see both sides of it.
And the idea, it does still have merit that typically the species is stronger, more unified. But it's like, but you know, where is that line? It's just like with the North and South of the United States. It's like, you know, is a unified states better? Well, yes, you know, but at the same time, do you want a certain group of the states to have all the control and tell the other ones what to do? No. So it's like, so, you know, where do you find that balance? And fortunately, the, you know, the United States, for the most part, has been able to find a balance, or at least continually work on finding that balance over the years. And it's no different with humanity and in the Halo franchise. And I think that we're going to see with Halo 4 and continuing on the trilogy, you know, there's going to be a continual look at, you know, they talk about John's destiny, and but it's also that, you know, the Reclaimer trilogy, it's humanity's destiny. And, you know, it's going to dive into things about, like, what is our responsibility? I mean, you know, when they talk about the Forerunners upholding the mantle as caretakers of the galaxy, you know, it all goes back to Uncle Ben, you know, with great power comes great responsibility. And, you know, are you worthy enough to wield that power? And we saw what the Forerunners did with it. And now we're going to see with Halo 4, 5, and 6 and whatever ancillary fiction that we get, we're going to see, is humanity also ready and worthy to take that up? You know, are we able to not just look after the galaxy species, but can we look after our own? Can we put ourselves in a new position of leadership and responsibility in respect to the sentient life in the galaxy? So,
yeah.
Getting back to the first strike, we touched a little bit on how Chief made his way from Halo back to Reach. and we really haven't gone much further from there, but, getting back to Castle Base, Halsey had discovered an underground, tunnel system with, possible foreigner artifacts. So she had a group of Spartans who actually went down, and there's a crystal that they discovered that actually alters some effects of gravity. Is that kind of
it affected time.
It's like a space-time shard of some kind. And I'm just trying to wrap up these two books, because I know we've gone on quite a while for you guys, and there's been some pretty good discussions, but I just want to kind of
Yeah. Well, this discussion could take a while too.
Oh, yeah.
Because with this Forerunner crystal, there were technically two Master Chiefs.
Huh?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Like Halo hit time travel. I mean, yeah. they did a time travel.
Should we just come back to this book on a later podcast?
I think so, because it's actually a very neat piece of the story.
All right.
But if you want to get technical, it actually, due to the time dilation, we actually had two Master Chiefs in the universe at one time. So he was his own co-op.
You'll have to explain that to one to me when we do our next show.
Sounds good.
Yeah, definitely.
If we're going to save this book for later, though, I do want to touch on probably everyone's most disliked book, The Flood.
That's not my most disliked book.
I've heard some people say it's one of their most disliked.
What's yours, Grim?
My most disliked book?
Yeah. Let's not say most disliked, because I like all the Halo books. What is your least favorite?
That's actually, I was just, it's a good quantification on there.
Or most disliked, I guess, is the correct term. But
the one I have read the least is Cole Protocol was a one and done.
Yep. I've read it more than once, but actually, you know what? I'm actually almost to the point where Primordium might be taking place of that book. Well, Primordium had such a magnificent ending, and that is what saves it from that.
That's what keeps it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep. That is what stops Primordium from being the bottom of the barrel. I mean, for me, Primordium was a lot like reading a Lord of the Rings book. I love Lord of the Rings. Don't get me wrong, but it is 200 or 300 pages of walking and doing absolutely nothing, and then about 50 pages of pure payoff. And it was that payoff that saved Primordium from being a pretty off story.
You know what's really funny is I find the Kilo 5 books to be the direct opposite.
Really? Hit me.
Yeah.
Lots of good payoff in the beginning, and then
the Kilo 5 have this great pacing through the whole book. And then it's like the end. Is this rushed finish?
Yes.
Wait.
Both books. Both books.
Really? Both books. Right.
Glasslands ends in an explosion.
Krypton and Primordium are the direct opposite. Krypton and Primordium are like, you know, three-fourths, you're like, drag.
Well, Krypton,
are we there yet? Are we there yet? And then all of a sudden it's like, wait, slow down. Oh, God, too much. It's full of stars.
Krypton had among the biggest payoff out of any of the books, like in the first 30 pages. And that's when you get to see Didact for the first time. Damn. That's a moment. And unfortunately, I had Didact spoiled for me rather recently.
There
are two fan sites that I will ever go to. I'll go to Halo fan sites, and I will go to James Bond fan sites. And some son of a bitch.
Did you get spoiled on a Bond fan site?
I got spoiled on a Bond fan site. I was going on to go talk about damn Skyfall. And
do they understand that it's 007, not 117?
Somebody must be following me because they must know that there are only two fan sites that I go on to go talk about fan fiction. And oh my God, dude, somebody put up some pictures of the legendary ending for Halo 4. They put up a picture of Didact.
I'm going to say right now, if any of you guys, listeners out there, put up a spoiler for the next Bond film on HBO or Waypoint, I will ban the out of you for Brian's sake here. So
I know this is a Halo podcast, but IGN gave Skyfall a 7.0. I just bought my 7.0, excuse me, a 9.0. They called it the best Bond film ever. I bought my IMAX tickets today. I am stoked.
Oh, that's awesome.
My IMAX is an hour and a half away from me. I don't care. I'm just, oh, God. And you know what? That's the same week as Halo 4, too. That comes out like 2 or 3 days after Halo 4.
Yep.
That's a big thing for me. But, anyway, so somebody spoiled me Halo on a James Bond site. And it was just because people are apparently putting these spoilers on just whatever website they can.
Yeah.
Apparently Kotaku's got a big bite of it. IGN's had some stuff with that.
I saw a headline of Kotaku, and it literally started it's like, they showed the video that was leaked, and then they made a note. Oh, man, Microsoft's really on top of that. They closed it within 20 minutes. Here's what was in the video. We'll describe it for you. And I'm like, facepalm me in the ass. Like, what in the world? Like, yeah.
It's just it's really disappointing that some people will go off and do that. And, I mean, one of the things that I've always been looking forward to ever since reading Krypton is seeing Didact for the first time.
Now, are you disappointed by it?
No. I was disappointed by how it was presented to me.
Okay.
Because the entire time, actually, Isaac, Final Postmortem, he was the one who actually described this for me in the best way. If you've heard the clip of the song Revival.
Oh, yes.
We were sitting in a car listening to it while we were at PAX, and he was kind of like doing a narration thing for it where he goes, okay, so you know how you have like the first 50 seconds or so of that song where it's just chanting, it's just getting, you know, the chanting is getting more and more and more intense, you know, it just sounds just absolutely crazy. This is Master Chief walking into a big empty room and you see the Krypton, and it's like the facets of the Krypton are opening kind of like this weird, crazy, thing, and then finally, you know, where like the music starts to peter off a little bit, and it goes dun, 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 dun. You know, that's when you finally see Didact. He's old, he's shriveled, you know, and Chief's just like looking at you, there's smoke, and it's kind of like just fading away from him. And then the second the music goes na 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 na, you know, like, you know, maybe his eyes just snap open. He does like this Dragon Ball Z style, muscles expand, you know, and he just. I was so anticipating that moment. And I unfortunately had it spoiled for me. I mean, it's a spoiler to even talk about. Well, I was not disappointed.
That's good. Good stuff.
Somebody in the HBO contest for what Didact looks like. Somebody nailed it, actually, surprisingly well.
Nice.
And I was actually it was to the point where I actually pulled up the two pictures and set them side by side, and I was like, wow.
Nice.
Okay. Good job.
Very cool.
Yeah, but I mean, just watch out for spoilers because it's.
Oh yeah.
It happens.
So we've actually updated our policy. I made a forum post earlier today, saying that if you post anything spoiler related, you are liable to be banned from our website.
Good.
Yeah.
Actually, Grim, you plugged a leak the other day on HBO, didn't you?
Yep. Yeah, I got up, I think, at like 4 in the morning to do that or something, because I got a tweet from Hedge, who lives in the future. he sent me a text, and he he literally is like, please take this off. And I see it, and it's, you know, I pick up my phone, and I'm like, okay. And I literally, I'm like, must remove leak. Must remove leak.
You know what? Actually, what's bumming me out now is a bunch of my buddies have seen the prologue for Halo 4.
Yes, I you know, it's funny. I really want to see it, and I don't feel like it would be like an overall spoiler, but I know that when I know that the moment that the YouTube video would be done, I would feel dirty.
And it's not that I would
feel not dirty, like as in like the wrong, even. I feel like I would have robbed myself the, you know, the putting the disc in, the getting it, the watching it in all of its HD glory, and then immediately getting to go in and start playing and start experiencing it.
Well, I think my problem with it would be is that, okay, say I watch it on YouTube, I gotta watch that again when I actually play the game, and it's going to be a sequence where it's like, okay, I've already seen this. Come on, let me get the other stuff. Well, and I don't know how long is that prologue. I have no idea. Is it a couple minutes? 5 minutes?
I don't even know. I don't even know. I know it's a few minutes, if I'm not mistaken. Okay, you know, and I don't know. It's just like I know so many people that are, you know, over at 343 personally too, and I know what kind of effort that they have put into this, and
absolutely,
I feel like I don't want to shake the Christmas presents.
I get that.
I know what it's like to give a family member something you've worked hard on, you know, or you give something to your kid or something like that. You know, there's nothing like the feeling of seeing them so excited when they get it in the right timing and they understand it. And then there's nothing like the disappointment of having the timing go wrong or be misplaced. And it's like, if I have the choice, you know, it's like, you know, like you said, sometimes you just stumble upon stuff and it really sucks. But if I have the choice, I am going to stay as spoiler free as possible for my own benefit and out of respect to these people who I know have put a lot of effort into, you know, wanting to give it to us in a certain way.
Yeah. And, that, you know, all that said, I'm actually not a really big fan of going dark. I said the other day, I'm not going to let terrorists dictate my schedule. I'm going to go on the internet.
And some of us can't. I mean, you know, like we, you know, and we've even
we have jobs that require internet, and
or even just responsibilities in Halo community sites where some of our jobs are to get rid of the spoilers and the leaks. So we are always in minefields, and so we try our best, and you know, it comes with the territory. So.
Yeah, I'm ready to bet that you and Claude have – you've probably seen your fair share of spoilers over the past few weeks or maybe even the past few months.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, with every game. There were some things that were spoiled for me in actually, the worst one was – and it was an HBO thing because Claude and I try – Claude reads every single post. I try to read every single post. The whole Virgil thing – the Virgil reveal was spoiled for me for ODST.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, damn.
Yeah.
Actually, so, you know what? That Virgil thing, one of the greatest things from Halo has come out of that Virgil bit, and that was the Forward Unto Dawn article about all the parallels between ODST and Dante's Divine Comedy.
Yes.
Damn.
That was really good.
You know what? I was a senior in high school when that game came out. And I had one of those very pompous English professors or teachers. And she would never, ever accept that anything modern has any societal benefit whatsoever. I mean, if it came out
including herself, I hope.
If it came out within the past 150 years.
That's then she's like, man, I hate kids. Glad I never was one.
Yeah. But I mean, if it came out in the past 150 years, then it was not a classic. It had absolutely no bearing. It just that kind of thing drove me nuts. And I actually pulled up that article and I showed her that because we were actually reading Dante's The Divine Comedy at the time in school.
And I showed her that, and she actually admitted, like, wow, okay, so there's a little bit more to this Halo thing than just blown up aliens. I was like, oh, you're straight, there is one. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, it's so easy for, you know.
How can I have my headphones back?
Absolutely. But, I mean, it's so easy to overlook Halo as just, you know, just a sci-fi series when, it is a very deep, 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 deep story. It has, yeah. I mean, I cannot think of another video game franchise at all that has the kind of potential that Halo does in terms of overall story. I mean, you have these magnificent games like, you know, Uncharted, for example. Well, Uncharted is pretty limited in its universe and what it can do. You have Crysis, which, yeah, Crysis has got some great backstory, but I mean, that's never going to be really executed quite as well. And I mean, just I cannot think of another. Maybe Mass Effect is really the only one with this kind of potential.
Mass Effect is the only one that comes to mind that I know a lot of fans, especially PC fans, would argue the same for Half-Life series. But I've never gotten maybe. The same impression.
I never got the same.
I don't think it has.
I'm not going to trash Half-Life because I know some people.
Oh, no, no.
Absolutely.
It's not a bash against Half-Life.
Yeah.
At all. But I just. And maybe it's just a personal thing. It just doesn't do it for me as much. Mass Effect is so far the only thing that has come close, and the only other series is the Assassin's Creed series.
Dude, you stole the words from my mouth. I was just about to say Assassin's Creed. Assassin's Creed is kind of there too, but I mean, Halo is by far, I really think Halo is the one with just the most opportunity. I mean, this could very well be. I mean, one they have the. Potential over the course of the next 10 years, the next 20 years, to turn Halo into one of the most well-developed franchises ever. And that goes beyond the video game medium. I mean, it could rival Star Wars in terms of backstory. It could rival, you know, Harry Potter in terms of, you know, audience and how it reaches, you know, it could rival Lord of the Rings in terms of its lore. I mean, it really has so much potential. And actually, that's one of the reasons why I'm such a big proponent of a Halo movie is if they can manage to snake a Halo movie onto the big screen, that would bring in so many more people. You know, I've always said this about Lord of the Rings. Grim, had you ever read Lord of the Rings before the movies came out?
I did.
You did?
All four. Yes. And including a decent bit of the Silmarillion. But,
I had read The Hobbit.
Your point is taken. Yeah.
I had read The Hobbit and that was it, right? But I mean, majority of Americans, I mean, and you know what? The only reason why I read The Hobbit was because my mother is from New Zealand. So from an English family, right? But I mean, you know, most Americans weren't really aware of Lord of the Rings until the movies came out. And then all of a sudden it's this huge, I mean, Lord of the Rings is a household name. Everybody knows it. And that's, I mean,
the Harry Potter series was that way with me. I had watched the first couple of movies and then I was like, okay. And then I actually had gone back and, you know, and read all the books.
Absolutely. But if they can make a movie that really, I mean, that can capture a broader audience and not just gamers, then, I mean, Halo could become a household thing. I mean, I got my mom to read The Fall of Reach.
My dad has read The Fall of Reach and Cryptum, and is reading Primordium right now, and he absolutely loves it.
Yeah, I could never get my dad to read anything Halo. He thinks it's the biggest waste of time. But you know, my mom was open minded enough. I said, "Hey, mom, tell you what. I mean, it's kind of tough for me to relate, you know, what this is to you. So, I mean, just read this book. Read Fall of Reach because it is the absolute best one to get started with. It introduces you to the main characters. It introduces you to the overall idea of what Halo is. It is a futuristic military science fiction story." And she absolutely loved it. She thought, wow, that's great. Give me some of the other Halo books. And I think she's in the middle of The Flood right now. And I mean, it's just – it is something that if they can make a good Halo movie, they're doing a pretty decent job with Forward Unto Dawn right now. I cannot wait for the next week's episode. So we can finally start seeing.
Me too.
Oh my god. Forward Unto Dawn isn't perfect, but they're doing a very good job considering the resources they've got with it. And just that kid who plays Lasky, he's gonna be a star one day. He is great.
Yeah, he is. He is an absolute blast. He's a great guy. And getting to spend some time with him was very, very cool. He's doing a really good job, and I think he's got a lot of potential.
Yeah, well, at the same time, I mean, I do film, and I understand, wow, I mean, they have a daunting task ahead of them taking Halo from a video game form and turning it into a film or into a TV show. But, I mean, I think that if they keep along the current trajectory, I don't necessarily want them to make a Halo 1 the movie, but stay away from that. Make it a contained story. You should probably stay away from Master Chief. Go focus on one of your other Spartans or a Marine or do something. But – if we can get, I mean, if Halo appears on the silver screen, then that would be something to rival Avatar. I mean, because A, you've got Microsoft's money, so immediately your budget. It's like, James Cameron, how much money did you put into that? Well, double it, right? Frankly, Halo has a good story. I mean, I know some people here may love or hate Avatar. I was not particularly a big fan of Avatar. It looked great, but I mean, the story had kind of been done before. You know, I mean, if you've seen Dances with Wolves and The Matrix,
Pocahontas.
You've got, and Pocahontas. You got the impression. It's amazing. I used to love Ferngully as a kid.
It's still pretty good.
I haven't seen it for 15 years. It's got
Robin Williams in it, which I had forgotten.
He's the bat in that. Okay. It's been forever since been 15 years since I've seen that. All right. But absolutely. Avatar was not necessarily so original. Whereas Halo is not original necessarily. There's a lot of stuff that they take from a lot of other franchises, but it's done in such a way and it has its own unique flavor. It is so far away from those other franchises that, you know, like Star Wars, like Alien. I mean, I think Alien is really that, and Starship Troopers are really the big ones that you can take and say, okay, I can see where Halo got a lot of stuff.
There's a lot of stuff from Alien. There's some stuff from Ringworld. There's some stuff from
Ringworld. Absolutely. Why didn't I even think of that?
Space Odyssey.
I know Claude is sitting there gritting his teeth right now, like Ringworld. But I mean, absolutely though. I mean, if they could take a Halo movie and they could even take the story out of one of the books, and I think I'd be okay with it. If they did a Fall of Reach,
I think Fall of Reach might be the best one to do. It would probably be the best way to do a fairly self-contained story. While having a beginning and having an end, but at the same time leaving yourself open to continue should it do well.
Mm-hmm. There's no way a Halo movie would do bad. Rotten Tomatoes might not like your film, but I mean, commercially, yeah, a Halo movie is going to do great regardless. Yeah. But I mean, that is one of the advantages that Halo does have, though, is that it has a good enough story that you really don't have to worry about reviewers. As long as you've got a talented director and, you know, a talented writer and a good cast, I mean, you can get away with this.
Yep. Totally agree. And on that note...
Well, hopefully with what we see with Ford to Dawn, maybe that might spark some interest into producing a Halo movie down the road somewhere.
That has to be the toe-in-the-water effort.
Yeah. So. Well, and we actually did another podcast recording before this one tonight, talking about Ford Under Dawn episode 2, because I was at Comic-Con this weekend, so I didn't have a chance to record, and we were kind of speculating on what the possibilities were about having another Ford Under Dawn like series for Halo 5 and Halo 6.
I'd love to see one about like Blue Team.
Ooh, that would be interesting.
I heard a bit of a rumor that Blue Team may be slightly involved with Ford Under Dawn in a little bit of a deeper way. Grim, you were in the – it was at PAX. You were in the panel with us. You were in the audience with us. Lionheart
asked the question.
Lionheart asked the question, and he put it up on Facebook. I'm certain I can find the link to their response, but they said that Blue Team may have some slight connections to what happens in Ford Under Dawn.
Yep.
Did they say there would be some slight connections in like Halo 5 and 6 as well?
Oh God, I hope so.
Oh, I think there will be.
It would be the ultimate moment in
Halo. The soundtrack song titled "Green and Blue." Most people think that it's a reference, of course, to Chief and Cortana. But I was like, what if it's really a reference to Chief meeting back up with Blue Team?
Blue Team, yeah.
That would be magnificent. But, like, I just sit here and think about this moment for just a second. Like, the first time that Chief sees these Spartans in years, like Kelly and Fred and them, Naomi maybe, they thought he's dead. The first thing they do is they do that little hand symbol on their visor.
Yep.
It says smile. A little
Ollie oxen free.
Yeah, dude, I'd lose it. I would absolutely lose it. Like, absolutely. And you know what? I think that could be a moment to top some of the Halo 3 emotional moments. Like, I think the most emotional scene I've ever seen in a video game, or in any medium, really, is there's two moments in Halo 3 when Chief finds Cortana, and, you know, she says, "You found me."
Yeah.
And then when Chief says, "Wake me when you need me." There's just two of the most emotional things I've ever seen. That could top
it. Looking forward to it. Hope so.
I would agree.
Cool, man.
I do want to get this book out of the way, because it's the only In my mind, the only purpose for this book really is the secondary story behind the book. It's basically a book that takes place during the events of Halo, and the big plot point is basically reenacting what Chief is going through in Halo. But there's a little side story that I want to touch on for like maybe 5 or 10 minutes to wrap up the show, and just kind of get out of the way so when we do the next show we don't have to touch back on it.
And next show we're gonna have to talk about Contact Harvest too, because we really glossed over that one entirely.
Yeah, Contact Harvest, Ghost of Onyx.
We glossed over. Oh, sorry.
Nice. So yes. We actually see.
Don't you dare make that an HBO headline. I'll kill you. we've already got a fight.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Already made one.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if that's the title for this show that he puts up on HBO. But besides that,
Grim and Newman glass over 3 or 4 Halo books.
Son of a
and then getting a fist fight.
Yeah,
Nipples were tweaked. Absolutely.
Nipples is canon.
Nipples.canon.net. Cody Miller, get on that. No, I hope my mom hears this podcast too. There's just all this talks about nipples.
Yes.
She's gonna be like so proud of me. She'll be like, what's all this talk about this guy tweaking your nipple? What? I'm like, Mom, this is the best part of the podcast.
Hello.
So why do you think I'm going back to PAX next year?
As I'm telling you, we're just keeping all the listeners abreast of all of the Halo news.
Indeed.
You're such a boot, you know that?
Oh man.
We try to do that here. We try to keep things going here at Podtacular. talking about keeping things going, we get a first look here at a Covenant's perspective of some things. There's some interactions between Yap Yap and Asuna, who are actually kind of sent out to I think they were sent out to go take Keys in because Keys killed one of their
the section spec-offs. With the Asuna. Yeah, the section with the Asuna. The Asuna was his title, not his name.
Right. But I forget what his name is, but
that little section with the Asuna in the Bumblebee life pod is like one of the greatest things ever. Where he's cloaked in the back and Keys is just chilling, and Keys notices
no one else does.
And he just like real casually, he's like, is your firearm loaded? You know, he's like took it and it's just like pop 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 pop.
You know, I love how he takes a moment to say too. He's like, you know, if I hit the hull, we're gonna explosively decompress and die. takes a moment to like, you know what, this could end badly. Bam 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 bam.
Keys is the ultimate badass. I would love to see the looks on the rest of the Marines' faces as just like dematerializing before their eyes was this elite, you know, like
absolutely. And like there's like all this like it's in low gravity too, so like, you know, like this is
the blood floating.
That was really great.
And really, you know, you bring up this whole side story thing. That to me was the value of the Flood. Like the parts that are recounting the game,
it's basically just a timeline to tell you where things are happening.
But they're really, actually, you get a, kind of poorly done.
You get a sense of like with the ODSTs and with Silva and the interactions there. You get a sense of that ODST and Spartan rivalry, and you also get another one of the great moments that's kind of forgotten in Halo fiction, and it is Chief giving a eulogy to a random Marine who had made it like halfway through the frickin' library, You know,
two-thirds
making people
or three-quarters?
Who complain about the library like feel like an idiot. You know, and he doesn't say much. I mean, I think he does. You know, my brother quotes it all the time. He would actually be Grim 4 would be better at it. But basically, he was like, you know, I didn't know you in life, Marine, but you know, you were obviously one tough son of a bitch. If the Chief eulogizes you like that, straight to Valhalla, like you are going
Ragnarok now.
Straight to Ragnarok. you're going. Do not stop, Pasco. You know, collect whatever. You are going straight to heaven. Like
any Skyrim fans, Sovngarde awaits, man.
There you go.
Well, you know what? That was actually the, like, that eulogy was cool, but it was actually those in Chief moments that I didn't like because they actually felt distinctly un-Chief. I'm not saying that Chief wouldn't do something as, you know, like a eulogy for a soldier. He would not use the words, "Man, you must have been one hardcore son of a bitch." That does not strike me as Chief dialogue.
No,
I do agree with that. Yes.
I seem to think.
Well, some of the other lines, too.
Chief has probably the utmost discipline. I mean, he's probably one of the most disciplined people in the entire universe. I don't think that he would. He doesn't strike me as the kind of guy that would cuss very often.
Yeah.
He has control. He doesn't need to. You know, that is just not an expression that he needs to do.
When Cortana and Guilty Spark are arguing in the control room, and all Chief does is he raises his voice a little, and he's like, "Enough!" I mean, like, poop comes out every time. Like, lose control of your bowels because he raises his voice, and the foundations of the universe actually begin to kind of shift around a little bit.
That wasn't even a yell.
It wasn't even yelling. He wasn't yelling.
That was like your dad, like, you know, like how it's worse when, like, dad says, "I'm not mad, I'm disappointed." Oh, and you're like, "Just yell at me. Just yell at me. Just yell.
Why don't you just punch me in the face, actually?" It's absolutely better.
You're like, yeah. I mean, that would be a better moment, right? I mean, he was just really great about that. I think it is Steve Downes himself, actually, he compares Chief to, he's kind of like, he's Dirty Harry.
Yeah,
he is Clint Eastwood. He's Dirty Harry. He doesn't have to yell. He just has to raise his voice slightly and show that he's, you know what, a little bit agitated. And people immediately stop what they're doing. And I thought that those in Chief moments just seemed distinctly un-Chief in that book. And that is really my only complaint with that. The rest of it is great. As a matter of fact, that book has one of the best moments in all of the Halo books, and that is Captain Keyes' Indoctrination of the Flood. Most intense moments.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
not only that, but Jenkins.
Jenkins was good as
well. They look at his perspective, that flood perspective, and him fighting to maintain consciousness.
Well, for anybody who hasn't read that book or didn't really understand, because it's kind of a difficult thing to understand what's going on in that particular sequence. The Flood is sitting there probing Keyes, trying to find out the location of not necessarily Earth, but, you know, other, you know, where's more food, right? And he figures out that the only way for me to stop the Flood from accessing this information is if I give it my own personal memories. And once he gives up these memories, they're gone forever. I mean, these are precious, precious things, you know, like, you know, moments with his children, you know, the memory of his father, first time he was with a woman, you know, just these precious moments to him. And they're gone, and he is aware of it too. And the only thing he is able to maintain at the very end is his name and his serial number. And oh my God, that was just. And the terminal.
The terminal. I was just going to say, it's something that I think the terminal caught very well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think it did it quite as well, but I mean,
it's pretty dang close, though. From what they could do from a visual perspective, the book just goes into a lot more detail.
No, the moment the terminal gets it really well is when he says, "No, I don't want to forget. Don't make me forget." Like, then he does it willingly. Like, and you see those memories go away.
Yeah, it was just, damn, was it good? That is the saving. I mean, like, I don't want to say that that's a useless book. But if you are reading, if you're on a quick schedule and you're like, I mean, Halo 4 comes out in 3 weeks. If you're on a schedule, normally I would say skip the Flood if you're trying to read the books quickly. But that is like, that is the moment of that book where it's like, wow, this is great.
Yep.
And I mean, that book would have benefited so much better if Chief actually was not in it at all. I mean, if it had 100% focused on other Marines or Jenkins or, I mean,
well, the whole story behind Alpha Base and what the Marines did there, I thought was pretty much the reason for the book. And Chief's storyline was just kind of to help kind of give a timeline of when events actually happened.
Yeah, okay. That's a good point.
Grim, I'm going to sound really stupid, but I need your help on this. So how the hell do you pronounce that word? It's B-U-T-T-E. Is that butt or is that butte or is that – what is that?
I think it's butte.
Butte, I think.
Butte?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, because I think I read that book the first time when I was – 11, and I called it a butt for about 9 years now.
I've always heard it pronounced as butte.
Butte. All right,
that's what I've heard as well.
Like Steve Irwin.
I like it better in my head though. We have to go take possession of that butt.
It was just like Halo meets Finding Nemo. I touched the butt.
I forgot about that. Yeah, it's a
sounds like
movie.
A grunt would come up to an elite and be like, ha, we captured the butt.
You know what? And here's the thing, too. I can actually kind of see like a grunt with like a little mini messed up arm.
It's just kind of flat. God, yes. That's the, yeah. That's his lucky claw.
Absolutely.
I think we're all on methane by now.
Yeah.
It's like 1 a.m.
What do you guys think of the whole interaction with Jenkins being half Flood and him telling the rest of the Marines that the Flood was coming up beneath them where they were basically camped out? That was
creepy.
That was creepy to me. Because it's like he's pointing below and then they figure out what he's talking about and they go down and have to weld some holes shut and they see they see remnants of battles going on between
Well, it's basically like those scenes from Alien 2 where they're kind of I think I don't know if that's in the actual movie or in the director's cut or not, but they start sealing up doors, they set up like an auto sentry in the hallway, and it was a really cool moment.
Yep.
So it's about time we do wrap up.
I agree,
because we've been going at this for about an hour and a half, and we obviously could not cover all I wanted to cover in.
No. If you want to do the books, it literally could take 4 episodes.
Oh, I'm sure.
I'm not even joking.
I'm sure it could.
I mean, you could honestly do one per book if you really want. I mean, like,
we plan to. So next year, after Halo 4 has died down a little bit, some of the off-topic shows that we're going to be looking at is doing the books, since I will have read through them all at least one time, and then going back and reading through a second time, I'll remember some more details the second time around. So, next year, maybe like 6 months or so, or maybe during the summer.
Well, by that point, we're going to be dealing with Silentium.
Yes.
I cannot wait for that.
So, we'll see what happens. I think we're going to do something like do a book every month.
Sounds good. I mean, we don't have to make a schedule now. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I
definitely want you guys involved because you guys know what you're talking about.
Yeah. We seem to. You're gonna
we
get
have our moments.
Yeah, I mean, no, there's gonna
it'll
be.
Just,
big
it'll just be nice when I've read the books and can contribute to the conversation in more detail and actually kind of direct the conversation.
You know, there's gonna be some people in the comments who are going, you know, you guys are idiots. This is how it happened.
It happens every time.
I do that on every fan site every time I listen. No, absolutely, it happens. It's a little bit different though when you're trying to memorize all the stuff off the top of your head when you're sitting there talking about it.
Yeah, it's hard. Well, how many types have you guys read the books? Because I've only read. I've read the first three twice now, but the first time I read it was like 8 or 9 years ago, so some of the details were vague and some.
Fall of Reach, I've read so many times. Cryptum and Primordium, Cryptum, I've read multiple times, at least 3 or 4. Primordium, I've read 2 or 3 times. Evolutions, I've read a number of different stories multiple times. Cole Protocol is the only one I've only read once. Flood, I've read twice. First Strike, I've read many times. Ghost of Onyx, many times. Glasslands, twice. And I guess Thursday War, I've only read once. But that kind of doesn't count the same as Cold Protocol because it just came out.
It just came out,
yeah,
right.
I've only read Thursday War and Glasslands once apiece. I've read Primordium once. I've read Cryptum a handful of times. This is going to sound absolutely ridiculous, though, but here it goes. So The Fall of Reach, you know, it actually came out before Halo 1 did. I got a hold of that before the game itself actually came out because I was looking forward to it. This is going to sound absolutely nuts, but here it goes. I've made an attempt to read Fall of Reach at least once a month over the course of – I mean, since that book came out. I have read that book dozens and dozens and dozens of times. I love it. So it's such a good book. That and, Ghost of Onyx, I've kind of done the same thing with that.
Yeah, I've read Ghost of Onyx a ton of times.
Ghost of Onyx is my favorite out of the lot, and I've done that, I mean, probably the sound with the same frequency since that book came out in 2006. They are my favorite books. Halo is my favorite story, period. It's my favorite franchise. It's my favorite, I mean, anything, really. I mean, the only thing that I can say that I think rivals Halo for me is, like, maybe James Bond, and James Bond has had a handful of real stinkers. James Bond's a weird one. You take the good with the bad. Whereas Halo, so far, we've been very fortunate in getting almost nothing but just greatness out of Halo. I mean, there are very few
missteps in Halo. So yeah. We've been very fortunate with that.
At least very few big ones.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that. I mean, and a lot of it really just comes down to personal opinion. Yeah. I mean,
like,
for me,
when,
Halo.
When we talk about one of the worst things to happen to the franchise is a distance of, you know, 70 to 100 miles on whether or not the Autumn was on the ground or in space
or
in
orbit,
and that's one of the worst things to happen to the franchise. It's doing pretty well.
And you know what? Actually, one of the things I love so much about it is that, I mean, for the most part, there are very few story problems that we can say that we have problems with. I mean, if anything, the only real problems I have with some of the Halo stuff is just some multiplayer changes. I mean, that's really it.
That's true.
I mean, if that is the biggest complaint, dude, we are doing fine. Halo is great.
I agree.
There has yet to be a Moonraker of or a die. There's yet to be a die another day of Halo. So Halo is doing quite well.
We could do a Spartans Never Die Another Day.
Shut up. We can't do that. Oh my god, that'd be awesome. Oh my god, I just thought of it. The mission in Halo Reach, it needs to be called Quantum of Solace.
Oh my goodness.
Oh, there we go. We're done.
Oh. All right. Thanks for having us on, Dusty.
Yeah.
On that note. The sequence where the Spartans drop from space, Skyfall.
Oh.
We're gonna wrap it up on that note.
ODST Skyfall.
Thank you guys for listening. Sorry for all the ramblings. I know these guys are very passionate, and most of the conversations were on topic.
We're not sorry.
Halo.
I'll take that as an insult.
Yep. No, I take it as a compliment.
I'm just saying. We weren't as on topic as I originally anticipated and kind of portrayed at the beginning of the show. So I'm not sorry for the discussions that you guys had. They're very good discussions. They're still on topic with Halo.
Pleasure to have.
And like these guys said, we could go on for hours. Well, take it back. They can go on for hours talking about Halo. I still need some work. It'll probably be a couple years before I even have half the retention of knowledge that these guys have. But that's why I have them on the show, because they know more than I do.
Grim, we need to do this another time when we're not on a time limit. Add me on Xbox.
I agree, man. I think it's the first show I've been on with you, and it's been an absolute pleasure, man.
Yeah, this has been fun. Actually, this is my second show. I did my first one the other night. We did a quick one after the debate on Thursday.
Nice.
We did a really quick one, and how long? That was like 45 minutes or something.
Yeah, it was about 45 minutes.
Yep. Yeah, cool. I mean, this has been an absolute blast. Thank you, Dustin. This has been great. And Grim, this is fun.
Well, we will try to have another show about, at least talk about a few more of the books before Halo 4 comes out. So we'll look at doing another one in 2 weeks and see how far we can get with some of those books. It looks like we'll probably get to the rest of the books, the Karen Travis books, and the other author I'm blanking at the moment.
The Greg Bear books.
Yes, the Greg Bear books. Well, it looks like we'll do a show about those a little after Halo 4 comes out, because that'll give me some time to catch up on those. So we'll definitely have you guys on before Halo 4 comes out.
Cool.
See how much we can get through the rest of the books. See if we can shotgun it a little bit more.
Sounds good, man.
Well, hey, gentlemen, this was a blast.
Absolutely. Yeah, so, feeling is mutual.
Thank you guys for listening. Make sure you check out our website, podtacular.com. While you're there, check out our forums. Also, just a reminder, we have Monday Night Matchmaking that's happening for the next two Mondays. We are not doing Monday before Halo 4 comes out, because hopefully you all will be in your lines waiting for the midnight release of Halo 4. And hopefully you have not been spoiled. If you have, we are deeply sorry. Following that, we have Twitter. You can follow us at twitter.com/podtacular. We have Facebook, facebook.com/podtacular. And also check out our YouTube channel, youtube.com/podtactv. Like I said in the last show, I'm trying to put as much content up there as I can, but it's a lot easier to put out the podcast, so we try to focus on making sure those are a lot more quality and are more produced than the videos. So we do put videos up there. We at least try to do it once a week, depending on what content comes out. So make sure you subscribe over there to get notifications on when we put videos up.
Nice.
If you have questions about anything that we've talked about in the past or any Halo 4 questions, anything that we talked about in this show, feel free to send us a submission, submissions@podtacular.com, or you can use the big green button on the homepage. And that'll pretty much wrap it up for this show. Thank you guys very much again for listening and for surviving this long through our podcast. And we will talk to you guys next time to talk about this week's bulletin.